and W248DE broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
This is Matt LePay, and you're listening to your home for your Wisconsin Badgers on 97.5 FM and 1320 AM WFHR, locally grown radio.
This is CBS News on the Hour, your home for original reporting.
I'm Monica Ricks in New York. Thousands are dead and hundreds more people are injured following a massive 7.2 magnitude earthquake in Turkey and Syria. Ismail Al-Abdullah is with a relief group called the White Helmets. They're digging through rubble to search for survivors.
It's a very difficult task for us. We need help. We need the international community to do something.
CBS's Tina Krause reports from our foreign desk in London.
The powerful earthquake struck near the border of Turkey and Syria as people slept. And daylight revealed the scale of the disaster. This man says 12 families were trapped here and no one managed to get out. Rescuers worked quickly and carefully in the bitter cold. Some still buried in the rubble posted videos on social media begging for help.
Turkey's president has declared a seven-day mourning period for those victims. Here at home, President Biden is weighing in on the tragedy. He says he's deeply saddened by the loss of life and devastation. The U.S. has already sent two search and rescue teams to the region to help. Meantime, U.S. military and law enforcement continue to collect debris from that Chinese surveillance balloon that was shot down over the weekend. CBS's Kimmy McCormick.
Recovery crews were able to retrieve some debris yesterday, but sea conditions prevented underwater crews from searching the area. They're at work today, and they include explosive ordnance teams. A U.S. commander says they're concerned about hazardous debris and possibly even explosives, and they're asking the public if debris washes up on shore to avoid contact and notify law enforcement.
Authorities in Ohio plan to release toxic chemicals from five cars of a derailed train in East Palestine to avoid a huge explosion. That controlled release starts in about 2 hours. Investigators in Maryland stopped two suspects from shooting up several power substations that would have left thousands in the cold near Baltimore. FBI special agent in charge Thomas Sobosinski says a woman was recorded telling an undercover agent about the plan.
Marylanders can rest assured that a threat to disrupt their daily lives by attacking the local power grid has been stopped.
Those suspects were neo-Nazi extremists. Two children who were kidnapped by their mother in Missouri have now been found in Florida. CBS's Wendy Gillette.
The two abducted children were found last week in a supermarket in High Springs, Florida, near Gainesville, with their mother, who did not have custody. 36-year-old Christy Gilley. Police located Gilley after running a routine vehicle check that showed she was a fugitive. Gilley remains in jail. The two children, who are now 11 and 12 years old, were abducted last March from Clay County, Missouri, a suburb of Kansas City.
Police say they'll be reunited with their family soon. This is CBS News.
Some people won't give you the real talk on drugs. But it's time we know the facts. Fentanyl is killing people. It's a powerful opioid, often made illegally and commonly mixed with illicit drugs. It can even be pressed into counterfeit pills that resemble prescription medications. Just 2 milligrams, about the size of a few grains of sand, can potentially be lethal. This isn't an ad to scare you, but it is an ad to make you think twice. Get the facts. Go to realdealonfentanyl.com. This message is brought to you by the Ad Council.
Wake up and text. Text and eat. Mm-mm. Text and catch the bus. Text and miss your stop.
Wait.
Text and be late to work.
Sorry, I'm late.
Text and work. Text and pretend to work. Text and act surprised when someone calls you out for not working.
Who, me?
Text and meet up with a friend you haven't seen in forever.
Hi.
Oh, hey.
Text and complain that they're on their phone the whole time. Text and listen to them complain that you're on your phone the whole time. Text and whatever. But when you get behind the wheel, give your phone to a passenger. Put it in the glove box. Just don't text and drive. Visit StopTextsStopWrecks.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio, WFHR.
Cloudy skies tonight with isolated rain showers likely. Lows around 31. Winds out of the southwest 10 to 15 miles per hour. Lots of sunshine tomorrow. Highs level off around 35. Lows dip down to about 19. Tomorrow night, mainly clear skies. 1 to 3 inches of snow Wednesday night through Thursday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 35.
Serving central Wisconsin since 1940.
WFHR, Wisconsin Rapids.
1993 to 1999, and again 2001 to 2003.
125 games, 292 tackles, 7 sacks, and a Super Bowl ring.
But there's more to life than stats, and there's more to life than football.
You're about to find out.
Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, featuring Packers legend Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram.
Monday mornings at 8 on The Shaw and on the Civic Media app.
A progressive voice for rural Wisconsin. WAUK 540 AM. Always streaming at WAUKradio.com. The Shaw 101 FM. Franklin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at WAUK.
Think tank approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Today on the big program, lots to get to, lots to talk about. Wow, what a weekend. For all the fear-mongering from the keyboard tough guys running around posting pictures of themselves with their big guns because there was a balloon. There was a balloon floating overhead. You'd think Pennywise was about to pull them into a sewer. You would think, wow. I mean, incredible. I mean, it's mind-blowing to me. And look, I talked about this over the weekend. As someone who grew up during the Cold War, when, you know, there was always a Russian something, you know, trolling around. There was always one of these moments. You know, it wasn't such a big deal. You know, you got used to it. Things happen. It shows how skittish our tough guys are. You know, back then you had tough guys. You know, something happens. Now It's a balloon. And again, for me, this is one of those moments where you go, oh, it says a lot about us as a society. It really does. In these kind of moments, I guess I'm old enough to remember when there was a national emergency, if you could call a balloon floating overhead a national emergency. Because understand, whatever they were getting, whatever that balloon was getting from, you know, 20 miles into the sky. I guess it was 60 to 100,000 feet is what they were saying, somewhere in that range. Whatever they were getting, you can get from Google Earth. You can get online. They could get from their satellites. Because understand, they've got satellites. But for me, it was one of these moments where, you know, I now look at what kind of a society we've become. And this is the frightening part. This is truly a problem. This should have been a moment of unity. This should have been a moment of coming together and you know, accomplishing something on the front of going, what do we do as a nation? Having a real conversation around what to do. Instead of, you know, a bunch of nitwits taking pictures of themselves, the guy from Missouri was hysterical. He's got the little child's size military backpack on the front of him. And it was so kind of, it was adorable. He was so cute with his big gun. He had the AR-15 with the big capacity magazine and the silencer on the front, of course, because we don't want the balloon to hear the bullet coming, of course. But he wanted it to look, he wanted to look like a tough guy. And the little tiny backpack, the little pack that, oh, it was so sad. So sad. But again, you know, he was going to take care of it. Now, for those who know anything, you know, okay, you're going to shoot in the sky. Maybe it goes a couple thousand feet. You're still, you know, 50,000 feet short. It's my favorite picture is, you know, a bunch of, you know, angry white people throwing bottles at the sky. You're not going to hit the balloon. But again, this should have been a moment where we came together. And, you know, over the weekend, I had, you know, friends call and go, you know, oh my gosh, is the sky falling? Is this the beginning of the war? Are they attacking us? And the answer is no. This is what, during the Cold War, used to happen a lot. They would send something, we would shoot it down. We would send something, they would shoot it down. And this is where we're going to end up. Trust me, this is going to happen. Because the Chinese are saying, well, you're using force indiscriminately against our balloons. So when the next time one of our drones goes over, you know, somewhere in their airspace, it's going to get shot down and we're going to have these international tensions. Congratulations. Welcome to the new Cold War. And whether Biden was going to shoot it down at the beginning or at the end, it was going to happen anyhow. This is how this is played out. This is how the game is played. The fact that we appeared on the international stage incredibly divided. Really, I'll tell you, you know, speaks volumes. The fact that you had a former president, you know, he looks weak, weakening the sitting commander in chief's position. Again, historic. You know, I come back to this moment. I go, you know, what if Bill Clinton, after 9/11, after Republicans allowed 9/11 to happen, what if Bill Clinton would have come out and said, you know, George Bush is the weakest leader possible. How is it possible that he could have let this happen? And we need somebody new. That didn't happen. The country mobilized. His approval rating shot up into the 80 and 90% range. When his father went into Iraq, the approval rating went through the roof. In that moment of crisis, we united. You know, it used to be that our divisions stopped at the water's edge. That, like any family, we have our little tiffs, we argue with each other, we smack each other around a bit, but when it comes to the outside world, we put down those petty differences. We put down the party labels. But oh boy, our Boberts and our Greens and our Ronnie Jacksons. Oh, the only thing that would have made Ronnie Jackson more angry had the balloon been carrying a gas stove. I mean, that's how ridiculous this is. And understand, full spin mode, outrage candy on steroids to get people angry. And congratulations, it worked. And then, you know, you knew it was coming. We find out that three balloons happened over the U.S. during the Trump years. Wasn't a big deal. You didn't see Democrats out there going, "Shoot the balloon." You didn't see that. Didn't see it at all. Because that's how this is played. And we had better get used to it quickly. And we'd better come around to some ideas on how we're going to move forward as a country. Because again, this is one of these moments. This should be a unifying moment. Because understand, most recent Morning Consult poll came out and said that 85% of registered U.S. voters are concerned about China's cybersecurity attacks on us, the economic threats that they pose to this country. But we were more concerned about balloons. Balloons. And this is one of those moments where you go, we should be having this conversation. And the thing that the Biden administration, I think, is doing and doing well, talking about how we're going to reshore manufacturing, how we're going to strengthen up our supply chains, how we're going to be able to compete in the future with the Chinas of the world since we gave our manufacturing away. And I've said this, people go, you know, Biden was part of that. Okay, he was part of it back 30 years ago. A lot of people were. I'm talking about the here and now, the fact that right now we need to be moving in a direction and quickly to start making things here again. And this is, again, when you get past the outrage machine, when you get off of the outrage factory and the division that they have to push, and the fringe characters, the Boberts, the Greens, the Gateses, the rest of them, when you get out of MAGA world, the reality is the vast majority of Democrats, Republicans, independents agree we need to be doing something on our economic policies. We need to be doing something on cybersecurity. We need to be doing more on human rights violations. We need to be doing a lot more on the military front. Because this is the part that is kind of comical. You know, the people who tell us that they love the military the most, and every time there's a photo op, they've always got a picture. There's always somebody in a uniform with a gun and a flag, and they're smiling ear to ear. Because, hey, it's good for PR. But it's amazing to me that they honestly didn't believe that the military had been tracking that balloon when it came into our airspace near the Aleutian Islands. They had no belief that they were tracking it. Now, when it first came to me, I said, you know, probably the reason they didn't shoot it down is they want to see where it's going. They want to see what the Chinese are looking at. Because guess what? Knowing what your enemy is looking at is kind of important. Thinking about, you know, strategically where they're going to go. Because if you think that balloon wasn't up there and we were blocking any transmission that it may have had somewhere else, because we've got technology like that, you're delusional. They're not going to allow that to happen. But they were looking at our military bases. I went on Google Earth. I can look at our military bases. Unless it's got some kind of X-ray vision where you can see down into the bunkers and through, you know, through cement walls, not helpful. And then the part that was amazing to me, and this is the part again, these chicken littles, the sky is falling, there's a balloon. The part that's amazing to me is all of these elected leaders, like the governor of Missouri saying, you know, that's where we keep our stealth bombers. Why are they looking at that? What? Might as well tell them where we keep the nukes. Oh, yeah, they did. They did. Montana. That's where we keep our nukes. It's really quite remarkable. And again, I look at our keyboard tough guys and we're going to go out there and we're going to shoot down that balloon with our pea shooters. All projecting this kind of strength while cowering like children. Hiding behind mommy's skirts. I mean, it's really telling. Now, again, I use this idea of this was a trial balloon. The Chinese did this specifically to see how we would react and to sow seeds of division. Mission accomplished. They did just that. And Republicans, again, failed this country. Question is what brings us back together? And this is what I think, you know, the State of the Union is going to be about on Tuesday. Well, the president's going to have to come out and talk about how we move this country in a positive direction, how the policies that they have pushed through over these last 2 years are going to make lives better, and how we're going to deal with crisis in the future. When you have a group of people who are hell-bent on running around screaming at the balloons. Love to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Going to take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. Listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
If you're a fan of the show, you've heard our Labor History in Two segments, and you can hear them on the radio pretty much anywhere in the U.S. Labor history has never been more important than it is right now. So here's what we'd like you to do. Tell a teacher. Tell a teacher that labor history is important and that they can get digestible 2-minute lessons that are absolutely free. Free to download, free to use, free to share. Tell a teacher to go to thericksmithshow.com/history and help us put labor back where it belongs, in the classroom. You know, generations of American workers fought, bled, and died to build the American way of life. It's our job to keep their stories alive. Go tell a teacher that we're here to help them do just that. Find us at thericksmithshow.com/historytoday.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I look at Tuesday's State of the Union address, and the president, really, he's got his work cut out for him. He really does. Because the right-wing echo chamber, the machine that they have built, the messaging machine they've built, is really second to none. They've got Americans convinced that we're on the wrong track. Everything's horrible. The sky is falling. The most recent NBC poll out says 71% of Americans think the country's off on the wrong track. And this is one of those things that he has to listen to. President's got to listen to the fact that the people aren't happy. In fact, there was another poll. There was a Quinnipiac poll, if I'm not mistaken, that was out that said, you know, or a civic science poll, it was, that came out and said that, you know, the highest level of unhappy people in decades, it's up to 12%. 12% of people are unhappy. Happy people are somewhere in the 50s, always somewhere in the 50s, never above 60, somewhere in the mid to high 50s. We're in the low 50s, 53% right now. 35% of people are neutral. I'm doing all right. 12% unhappy. And that's up over the last couple years. It was 10% for a while. So he's got to listen to that. He's got to listen to the fact that people are struggling, that inflation is really hurting. Hurting a lot of working families. And he's got to talk about this. He's got to talk about the programs that are going to move us in a direction that are going to be helpful, the things that they've done thus far to create jobs, the manufacturing that they're bringing back, the infrastructure bills that are going to get people back to work in good union jobs that are going to be able to raise standards of living. That's all going to be helpful. But he's got to make the case that this inflation, got to have a boogeyman. And the right has said everything's Joe Biden's fault. You know, I can't tell you how many people go, eggs are $11,000 an egg. Locally, I think they were $319 or something like that. He's got to be able to make the case and going, look, here's where our problem is. Our problems, supply chains are broken. We are working on getting that fixed. We're reshoring manufacturing. We're investing in infrastructure. We're investing in job training. We're investing a lot of things to help secure our supply lines. That was broken long before I got here. Well, we outsourced all these jobs. We did all of the, like, corporate America and the greed in the boardrooms decide our national manufacturing strategy. We are now moving in a direction to reclaim some of that. And then talk about the jobs that are being created around in manufacturing. You know, how we're bringing those jobs back to help feed that supply chain. But he's also got to talk about the fact that, you know, you look at the oil companies who have just been gouging us like crazy. Record profits that they have never seen before in history. The kind of obscene profits that they've never seen that these oil companies are putting in their pocket. And then telling us, no, it's Biden's fault the oil prices are so high. No, this is good old-fashioned American greed and opportunism. Corporate America is gouging us. And he's got to come out strong in talking about how, you know, the Federal Trade Commission is going to start looking into antitrust violations. We're going to start going after these gougers. We're going to start holding these people accountable. And we're going to use our government to hold them accountable and to help the average consumer and to help people get through. And he's got to do it in a way that people are going to understand. It's much easier to just go, no, Biden. Because that's all we hear from the right. They don't have a plan. There's nothing there. They've got no platform. They've got no ideas. They've got nothing other than just anger, other than just throwing a temper tantrum and going, Biden, Biden, Biden. Everything's Biden. And whoever would be next, it's going to be them. Because, again, they've got no solutions. There's nothing there. Now, this president has created, in 2 years, more jobs than any president in our country's history. In 2 years. And the response I get from my friends on the right is, well, you know, workforce participation's down. And you go, a little bit. It's ticked down a bit. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that a lot of people who are older aren't going back into the workforce for a bunch of reasons. One, COVID's not over. I know the right wants has passed. I know the House passed legislation saying COVID's over and it's done. For a lot of people, especially the older workers, it's not. And they're worried about it. And they're going, heck with this. We're going to retire. That's a huge portion of the people not in the workforce. But they want you to believe that there's a bunch of lazy people out there that your hard work is covering. No, the big part of that is people retiring. Now, I do find it interesting that the people who complain about workforce participation are the loudest voices, mind you, are the people from the states that have the lowest workforce participation. Now, understand, what they want you to believe, they want you to believe it's those blue states with their high union density rates and their union wages and their union health care and in their social safety net programs like food stamps and unemployment. You know, they want you to believe that those states are the ones that are staying home en masse. And the reality is the states with the lowest workforce participation rate is and always has been our southern states. What has been dragging us down for decades. Well, from the beginning of the country, basically. West Virginia has the lowest workforce participation rate, 55%. Followed by Mississippi, New Mexico, Arkansas, South Carolina, Alabama, Kentucky, Maine, Louisiana, and Florida. Now Maine and Florida, you go, I can almost see that. A lot of retirees there. But the rest of those are solidly, red states. Well, not New Mexico. New Mexico is a swing state. The rest of those are West Virginia, Mississippi, Arkansas, South Carolina, Alabama, Kentucky, Louisiana. A lot of red there. And not much safety net. Not much union density. So the arguments that the narrative that they throw at us, it's not there. It's not working. But we don't think that far down the road. The area with the highest workforce participation, oddly enough, the place everybody loves to hate, Washington, D.C. 72% of people there have jobs. And it's all those welfare people. Because to listen to a Republican talk about our welfare programs and to talk about workforce participation, you would think there are no workers in D.C. I mean, that's the part that just is kind of remarkable to me. So I think the president's got to talk about the debt ceiling as well. That's got to come up. And the danger that is going to be caused by us holding the country hostage. I think that has got to come up. And you've got to point names. You've got to point fingers. You got to point them out. We cannot in any way, shape, or form not pass a debt ceiling increase. Now, remember, Republicans, they want to hold us hostage. They want to hold the country hostage. And Social Security, I know Kevin McCarthy said it's off the table. It's not. There are members in the Republican study group, of which about 75% of House Republicans are members. They have signed on to wanting to raise the retirement age to 70. And then once it hits 70, to index that to raise every year after that. They want to means test Medicare. They want to do a whole bunch of stuff that, again, we're not destroying Social Security and Medicare. We're just fixing it so it works better for corporate America. That's the reality. What the president needs to be talking about is I will not allow anything negative to happen. I will veto every Republican proposal on Social Security and Medicare. I will only sign a bill that expands it, that helps seniors and helps people move forward.
I was just curious as to why you called it the Paul Revere Show.
The Paul Revere Show is named this way because the poem that we all know, the famous ride, the poem was written to rally the troops to fight slavery and fight for democracy. And so I named the show the Paul Revere Show because I thought it was the time to get on the air and talk about democracy.
The Paul Revere Show with Mark Thompson. Listen Monday, 7 to 8 p.m., always on the Civic Media app.
Every day, people begin a difficult and sometimes desperate search for programs that can provide assistance. United Way's 211 is there to connect you to the programs and services you need. For non-emergency information and referral services, call United Way's 211 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. How do you locate a support group for widows or housing for an elderly parent? United Way's 211 is free and confidential and provides answers to these questions and more. Dial 211 for community information and referrals, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Wisconsin enjoys a rich history in broadcasting, which we celebrate at the Wisconsin Broadcasters Hall of Fame. I'm Michelle Vetterkind, president of the WBA. We honor those who have devoted their careers to serving their local communities as legendary broadcasters. They are personalities, owners, engineers, and educators. It's an experience that's free for all to enjoy. Visit the Wisconsin Broadcasters Hall of Fame, located inside the Milwaukee Hilton City Center.
Tom has been a teacher for over 40 years. One day, I think one of the students had asked the question and he didn't remember the answer. And I also noticed that he was letting his class out earlier than they were supposed to let out. I was really starting to worry.
Levi and I talked about how it would change our lives, but he was there beside me.
When something feels different, it could be Alzheimer's. Now is the time to talk. Visit alz.org/ourstories to learn more. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
As you go about your daily life, look closer. As you gather with family and friends, look closer. Right in your community, there are youth who don't have the home, warmth, and healing you have. So, look closer. Every year across America, a staggering 4.2 million youth are homeless or trafficked. Covenant House is the national leader providing safe housing for youth 50 years strong. Tonight, 2,000 young people will sleep safely in a Covenant House bed. And tomorrow, they will wake up surrounded by love. Every youth who walks into Covenant House gets clean clothes, hot meals, medical care, and a safe place to sleep 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, in sites across America to help them fulfill the great promise of their lives. So, look closer at Covenant House and help us fight youth homelessness. To help or get help, go to covenanthouse.org.
This is the story of a very special woman. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician or an entrepreneur. Her knowledge was limitless and still is. She could also make monsters disappear, especially those that lurked in the shadows under the bed. Once, this woman put back together a teenage girl's broken heart, which had been shattered in a thousand pieces, just by giving her a bear hug. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
If you talk, they will hear you.
We all want our kids to grow up safe and healthy. So we show them how. And we tell them with honest conversations that let them know what we expect. Not just one time, but every chance we get. That's especially important when it comes to alcohol and other drugs. Kids not only need to know the dangers and how to avoid them, they need to hear it often from you. And when it comes to pain medications, opioids, they need to know that they should never be taken without a prescription and never shared with friends or family. It's dangerous and illegal. So talk with your kids and guide them through the challenges of growing up safe and healthy. Because when you talk, they hear you. For more information about talking with your kids about underage use of alcohol and other drugs, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
So talk. Can do it if you try.
Kids across America are going to school hungry. Millions of kids every day. Hungry kids get sick more often and can struggle in school. It can be harder for them to focus and learn. But one simple thing can help change all of this for a hungry child in America. Good healthy food and the energy it brings. With help from caring people across America, No Kid Hungry is providing healthy meals and hope to hungry kids so they can build better futures.
We want to ensure that all of our kids have healthy meals every day.
Thank you.
Thank you for helping feed our kids.
To learn more about ending child hunger in America, go to helpnokidhungry.org today.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio, WFHR. Cloudy skies tonight with isolated rain showers likely. Lows around 31. Winds out of the southwest 10 to 15 miles per hour. Lots of sunshine tomorrow. Highs level off around 35. Lows dip down to about 19. Tomorrow night, mainly clear skies. 1 to 3 inches of snow Wednesday night through Thursday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 35.
Locally grown radio from Vesper to Plover, we are your home for news, talk, and sports. 97.5 FM and WFHR, 1320 AM.
Also, got some intel background, which is the reason I brought him on to share some thoughts, because there's parts of this that I think we should have a real honest conversation around. Phil, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks, Rick. It's an interesting subject.
So were you running around in your backyard with your slingshot, you know, shooting up into the sky because the balloons were coming around?
No, I can't say that I was too. I can't say that I was too nervous about it. You know, I kept reading reports about this balloon coming across the country. No, I can't say that I was that worried about it.
No, but here's the thing, and this is where I came down on this. I grew up during the end of the Cold War. This kind of stuff happened. I remember as a kid, you know, having to dodge under the desk because, you know, Catholic school desks, you know, evidently stopped a nuclear winter because we understood the idea of mutual assured destruction. And every once in a while you'd have, there was a Russian ship off the coast or a submarine or something. It always happened. You didn't have people running like they were really afraid of. This is amazing to me. Or am I missing something?
No, I think, I think social media and the way that media now is so segregated. You listen to the media you want to listen to that gives your point of view. And unfortunately, straight news is not really a thing very much anymore. So this kind of thing, it just drives wedges, more wedges into the population.
Yep.
So, you know, what used to be something that was normal, let's face it, every country sends over, you know, spy planes, or in our case, you know, we have drones. We used to have U-2 aircraft and SR-71 Blackbirds that flew over Russia and China and wherever else. That was normal. It had been normal, and don't think that the other side wasn't sending stuff over the United States. They were, just like we were doing over there.
Yeah, but I come back to this, and you know, I believe this was kind of a trial balloon. I believe the Chinese did this to go, hey, let's see how they react. Let's see what reaction of the U.S. military is. Let's see what the reaction of the American people is. And I got to tell you, I think we failed. I think we failed the trial balloon test.
Well, I think certainly, you know, I don't know, years ago, the idea of foreign policy and foreign affairs was politics stopped at the water's edge. And that has gone away over, you know, the last decade or so, to where everything is fair game. You know, nothing is a secret. Nothing is nuanced. You know, all you have to do is look at the Twitter feed of some people, you know, Boebert and Jordan, and look at their Twitter feed over the last couple of days with this. It's just gotten ridiculous. And I would hope that at some point the public, I hope, starts to realize they're being played. I don't know if they will or not, but I think they should.
But it's one of these things where our, you know, again, you know, I look at the media structure, I look at the messaging that comes out. It's, you know, crisis. We've got to have a crisis, and then it's panic, and then panic, and then you've got, you know, we've got to have, you know, each side ramp up and attack the other, and it seems like we're attacking each other and not the problem. Look, China's a problem. We've got some serious issues with China on the economic front, especially. And I think this administration is addressing some of that on the cybersecurity front, on the supply chain front, especially when you're talking about military needs, bringing the, you know, manufacturing chips here. I think there's a lot that has to be done. And we're just not, I don't know that we're a serious enough country yet to be able to deal with real problems, because we're still worried about balloons.
Well, I think we certainly... As the administration has attempted to bring manufacturing back to the United States, I think the other thing is people don't realize how long that takes. You know, we are in a global economy. The chip issue, when it came up, how long does it take to build a plant, train people to create chips, the right ones, the ones that are needed at that moment? Those things all take time. And unfortunately, we become a society that thinks, oink, I hit my button, I want this now.
Yep.
That's not how that works.
And DoorDash will deliver it.
Correct. You know, we've been battling China economically for decades. We all, you know, this isn't new. And then, you know, think of them stealing... you know, a lot of our technology and patents and things that we were creating and cheapening it and selling it back to us, essentially, or selling it across the globe to other countries. You know, I guess that's part of what this balloon thing was. I don't know, as it went over Alaska, Wasilla, I guess. I don't know. I just think that people get too focused on these things. If you were in the military, if you ever got a briefing about what was going on in the world, these things were going on a lot. Now, I was in the 80s during Reagan's period of time, and believe me, this stuff was going on a lot. You know, we were looking at various countries and all the time as threats, and they were looking at us. And that's, you know, kind of how it was.
Yeah, but the thing that gets me is it's a balloon. It's a balloon, 80,000 feet in the air. What possibly... could that balloon have gotten from 80,000 feet in the air that their satellites couldn't get, that Google Maps couldn't have gotten them?
Probably nothing nowadays.
Yeah, I mean, that's the part that we a total freak out without the thought of, you know, what are they actually gathering? And from a military perspective, because you were a military guy, is there some advantage to going, well, let's see where it goes. Let's track it. Let's find out what data comes out of it. Let's see what they're sending back, because we've got the capability to do all that stuff. There's value in that, right?
I think it's like you said originally, though, they sent this over to kind of provoke something. Yeah. It's not a technological advancement. So whether it was a weather balloon that went astray, or whether it wasn't, whether it was a piece of technology that shouldn't have come this direction, you know, it's a pretty outdated form of it.
Yeah.
Considering, you know, they're trying to go to the moon. We're trying to go back to the moon. They have satellite systems just like we do across the, you know, around the globe. So it's kind of it's an odd way of doing anything that is supposed to show technological superiority.
Yeah, good point. You listen to the Rick Smith Show with Phil Glover. Phil's the AFGE local national District 3 National Vice President. You can check out their website, afge.org. I want to get your thought on the State of the Union, kind of turn. I'm sure the balloon will come up, you know, as, hey, we shot it down, we did that. But there's got to be much more. There are a lot of people who are struggling. Inflation's still, you know, hurting working families. What are you expecting to come out of the State of the Union address? And as, you know, as a head guy over there at AFGE, what are you hoping to hear for your members?
Well, I think... I think what you're going to see is the president putting forward what things have happened since the pandemic, when he came into office, the jobs reports, 3.4% unemployment, trying to get the economy back up and running the way it should after, you know, a complete shutdown. And again, that's, you know, I think one side of the aisle is going to sit on their hands. The other side of the aisle is going to jump and clap. And unfortunately, nobody wants to recognize or they're into these political corners. So as the country comes out of a once in 100 year pandemic, we're going to see, you know, we see a tax on labor. You know, just a year ago, people were praising nurses and teachers and everyone else. And there are attacks on labor now. There's a tax on, you know, teachers. There's a tax on their income. We're coming back to that again. We've come around circle. So we must be out of it. And, you know, you look at this idea of inflation at the same time, you see major corporations with huge profits. Exxon reported huge profits this past year. All of these other corporations. So that's not inflation. That's gouging. And so, you know, the narrative is inflation, inflation, inflation. But the truth is that's not what is going on. The truth is these companies were shut down during a pandemic and they're trying to make their profits back. And so they're jacking up prices. And the regular person out there, like you and me and others, are paying the price for it. We got a little tiny bit of help during the pandemic. Small businesses got a little bit of help. People got a little bit of help. But the fact is these companies want to make back all the profits that they didn't make during that 2 or 3 years. And they're hammering us. And I wish the Congress and the White House and others would really step up that message instead of this inflation message, which I think is bunk.
No, I'm with you. And this is where there's part of me that hopes the president comes out and says, look, you know, the Federal Trade Commission is going to start launching major investigations. We're going to come up with a Truman-esque committee to do, you know, to look at, you know, pandemic profiteering. We're going to go after these companies and find out why these prices are so high, why inflation's gotten out of hand, and start locking people up.
I, you know, even toward the end of last year when the House was still in the Democrats' hands, you didn't see them bring these companies up in hearings and ask, you know, that the Senate can do that now that they have a majority. Last year they were 50-50 and they really didn't have subpoena power unless both sides agreed and other things. Now that the committees are not equal, you know, the Senate should start doing that. They should start bringing some of these companies in and asking them where their profit lines are and why all of a sudden they're coming in with this kind of margin and how that's inflationary. The public deserves to know that.
Yep.
And that we also ought to be talking about. Every time I see a tweet from a Republican that says, you know, inflation's up this much and it's Biden's inflation, I always tweet back, are you proposing price caps? Or are you going to actually increase the minimum wage? They're not going to do that.
Right. There's no policy. And this is where my question comes of, you know, should Biden come out and say, look, put a bill on my desk to be able to do this, this, and this to address inflation. If you want to do something in the House that's going to be helpful, since you don't have any plans, because the reality is Republicans have no plans. There's nothing. I mean, we've denounced socialism. Congratulations. You passed a resolution that has no enforcement, has no goal, no anything. You did your performative thing. Bread and circus, congratulations. Yay. Good for you. But you don't have any legislation that's going to actually do anything other than get you your 15 seconds on fake news. So should he be coming out and saying, look, I want this. I want a price gouging bill on my desk. I want an increase in the minimum wage. I want to be able to do these things. I need these tools to help the American people get by.
I certainly wish he would do that. I mean, I think he could put them on their heels a little bit if he did that. You know, we just had a bill the other day pass, which we were not for, called the Show Up Act. you know, federal workers worked all through the pandemic. We had office workers that obviously worked, they were working from home. They didn't bring them into office spaces where the, you know, they could be infected by the virus. And so the first bill out of the chute from the new Republican chairman of the Oversight Committee is this bill to get us all back to work. Well, we've been working. Social Security offices have been processing Social Security. VBA has been processing veterans benefits. You know, everything's not ideal, but it wasn't ideal in the office setting either.
Yeah.
Actually, productivity in some cases went up because people didn't have to commute in an hour or commute home an hour. They got up, they go to their station, start working.
Yep.
You know, they don't have coffee breaks with their buddies. You don't have lunch to go to and then come back and then get back into the day. There's trade-offs. But that's the first bill that they put forward on the federal workforce.
Yeah, but their narrative, Phil, and you know this as well as anyone, is nobody's working. Everyone's lazy. Nobody wants to work. Everyone wants to just sit at home because they're not really working at home, Phil. They're sitting on the couch with their feet up watching Oprah.
Right. Well, I mean, and that's the technology doesn't allow that.
Yeah, but I mean, again, you're explaining. The narrative is you get to sit home and do nothing.
Right. Well, that's their narrative. And, you know, I think I hope that the Senate doesn't take this up. It's ridiculous. They should have held hearings on it. They didn't. You know, if Chairman Comer really wanted to talk about the federal workforce, hold a hearing.
Yeah.
Have some people come in. Have the agency heads come in, have the union come in, and have a discussion with the, you know, with the committee. What's been going on for 2 years? But no, that's not how they handle business. They had said they wanted to go back to regular order. And, you know, the only Republican to vote against that bill, by the way, is Brian Fitzpatrick out of PA1. And because he knows us and he talks to us and he asks us questions. You know, unlike what has taken over the House. And I can only, you know, hope that as a federal worker representative, that we can get to the point where there is regular order, where they hold hearings and bring in people to go over these things. And I hope it's not a circus.
I'm with you. Last question I've got for you. You know, what are you looking for in the State of the Union? Is there something specific that you'd want to see the president put in there? If you had you know, a chance to pencil something in, what would it be?
If I had a chance to pencil something in, it would be something on the federal workforce that, you know, he appreciated what has been done by our federal workers over the last few years during this pandemic, and going forward, what his vision is for federal workers. As I think I've told you, the secretaries that he's appointed are not following his labor management agenda, and certainly the managers down below aren't. I hope he says something to the federal workforce about that.
Well, we'll see. Phil, I appreciate the time. As always, great stuff, my friend.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it, Rick.
Anytime. Our good friend Phil Glover. He is the AFGE District 3 National Vice President, AFGE.org, the website, if you want to take a look at what they do. Going to take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. Love to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. If you miss any portion of the program, make sure you grab the podcast. Wherever you find your favorite podcast, you will find ours. Quick break. Right back.
Phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1919. That day began the week-long general strike in Seattle, Washington. As World War I drew to a close, many workers in the city were frustrated by 2 years without pay increases due to the war.
35,000 workers in the shipyards walked off the job. Workers from most of the 110 union locals across the city voted to support the general strike. At 10 a.m. on February 6th, the citywide strike began. As many as 65,000 workers, or a fifth of the entire workforce of the city, walked off the job. They were met by a combined force of the police and the military. It has been nearly a century since the Seattle general strike. This unprecedented stand by the city's workers has been remembered and commemorated in many ways. Perhaps the most innovative memorial came in the form of a rock opera. In 1985, Rob Rosenthal set the story of the strike to music. He based the lyrics on research and interviews he did as a graduate student at UC Santa Barbara over the course of 10 years. A band named The Fuse formed to record the 21-song album. The final project was a blend of rock, blues, and folk. The music tells the story of a fictional man who comes to Seattle looking for work in the shipyards during World War I, joining the labor movement and the strike. What labor history event would you like to hear set to music?
Without a muscle, without a brain, nothing would ever go. We run it all. We run it all.
Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Again, I come back to there's a lot that needs to be put into this State of the Union address. And if I'm writing it, he's probably going to give a 6-hour speech if it's me writing it. So I don't envy the speech writers, because, look, there's a lot of messaging that has to go into this. Because, look, the right-wing outrage machine doing a masterful job of convincing people that their lives suck. And inflation is hurting people. Something has to be dealt with. Now, globally, inflation's much worse than it is here. But still, people need to connect. Let's go to the phones. Got Alice on one. How are we doing, Alice?
We're doing okay once I escaped from the containment camp yesterday.
Uh-oh.
I'm not joking. The right wing has lost their ever-loving minds. And I guess coming new to you, close to everyone that's in a red state or near a red state, as you know, my husband was in the hospital, just got released yesterday. And he was in a hospital in West Virginia. And I went to pick him up, and I don't know if it was the Chinese spy plane or what have you, and I'm not joking, exaggerating about any of this. I walked into the hospital, and I started around their little poles and whatnot that they have there, and this little blonde thing just about tackled me to grab me by the arm and scream at me, going, ma'am, where are you going? Where are you going? You need to come with me. I'm like, excuse me?
Were you in a restricted area? Were you somewhere where your presence was a danger to somebody?
No. The thing yesterday was you had to show your photo ID and get your picture taken.
Yeah.
To go into the hospital. I'm not joking.
And no, that's coming everywhere. I mean, our need to feel secure. Again, I go back to the Patriot Act, you know, the fact that we gave away so much power just because people needed this illusion of security. It's only getting worse.
Well, it is. And so I had to show my ID to pick up his prescription. So they were like, well, we'll bring him down. And I'm walking out of the hospital. And now this young guy comes running up to me and goes, ma'am, I'm like, what now? I'm already aggravated. I've had enough.
I can imagine.
It's been a drama-filled situation from start to finish. I'm done. And I said, what? He said, where's your visitor's badge? I need it back right now. So I looked at him and I said, it wouldn't stay on my coat. I reached in my pocket and it had stuck itself back together, and I just handed it to him and gave it back to him. And I thought, this is ridiculous.
What's your favorite thing about a good movie? What makes the perfect song? And what's it about the first lines of a book that will snatch our attention? If these questions intrigued your artsy interest, you don't want to miss Director's Cut on WFHR every Sunday night from 8 to 9. Your WFHR program director, James, and head of production, Seth, will be diving into the local arts and entertainment, hot topic movies, hidden gems, and more. Audience feedback and requests are encouraged for this fun and open conversation about art in all its forms. It's artists supporting artists, in their own words.
It was a normal day.
He was in some minor accident, a fender bender.
And I had this impulse to call him, but I didn't, because I thought I could call him later that week.
He abandoned the car, he came home, and he shot himself without ever talking to anyone.
When I came home that night and I found her, they told me that she had shot herself. And I couldn't believe it.
I asked if he was okay.
Taking a gun into your house for protection is